Well, good morning, everyone. Thank you for everyone for coming here. We have not established a quorum, so this the items that require a vote until we have other people show up, we won't be able to take action on those. But a couple of things here. So we'll call the meeting to order. This is the Kenosha County Broadband Advisory Committee. Before we start here, that the county executive did formally announce the appointment of two additional members to the committee. One of them is with us this morning, is Michael Marshak is here. He attended our last meeting, but I wanted to make sure that everyone met Michael. And then Sharish Chalasani. But I was planning on being here, but is not here yet. So those are both now sitting members of the committee. We will open it up for public comments. Is there anyone here that wanted to make a public comment? Public comments and public comments. Is there we just have one person online that's a committee member.
Christine Anderson.
Yeah. Okay. So, all right, then we'll say public comments are closed. The minutes from the last meeting are before you. We won't be able to adopt them without a quorum here, but did anybody see anything in the minutes that they thought might be that they had comments on?
I didn't see note any changes.
If we get a quorum here, Joe, we'll come back to that. So I do want to respect a time here because our presenter has other places to be. We are planning on inviting over time here various vendors and industry people to give us insight and their thoughts. So we started out is that I had reached out to Nick Ivankovic from Midwest Fiber, and he graciously scheduled us in here to make a brief presentation for us. So Nick is going to do an introduction of his company and give us some kind of highlights, and then it will be available for any questions. So Nick, you're on.
And Nick, you're welcome to come up to either these tables or the lectern, whatever you're comfortable with.
I think my voice will carry enough, right? Or do you want me not on the mic? Okay. I'm actually off to. Good morning, everyone. Yes, John did invite me to come in and speak briefly today about Midwest Fiber. And so my name is Nick Ivankovic. I'm the managing partner of Midwest Fiber Network. We are a licensed public utility in the state of Wisconsin. We're considered an alternative telecommunications utility, which allows us to own, operate, and maintain fiber networks throughout southeastern and most of the state of Wisconsin. We've been in business since early 2000. We have been building networks ever since, and currently we're the largest privately owned private provider in the state. One of the initiatives that we're currently working on is broadband expansion to the residential communities. We are working on three different projects. We have a project right now in Mequon, Wisconsin, which is an offshoot of a network expansion for Concordia University. We have a project in Jackson, Wisconsin, which was a public-private partnership with both the village and town, where we're expanding fiber to the residents there in underserviced areas, and also currently working in Paris as well with an expansion for residential throughout the entire town itself. Some of the information, if you want to move to events facilities and other venues, as well as other government entities within the footprint. Services to multiple public venues throughout our footprint. And some of the venues up here, you'll see it's a public market. It's a gathering spot, has restaurants and food vendors. You'll see the venue name, you'll see the user count, and then you see the data consumption. And so I took a sampling of general public. There's been a proliferation of data needs, and a lot of the requests we're receiving is to how to get fiber and connectivity and alt services to larger public venues. And so the first one is a public market. You see there are 6,000 connections served in a week. So that's 6,000 independent devices that were connected to the network. And you can see it was 56 gig of offload. This is a 1 week sampling. We have two public marinas that we serve as well, both for offload and Wi-Fi. And you see each of them have varying accounts of devices connected from phones, TVs, other mobile devices. And you can see between them pretty serious data offload needs.
When you say offload, you're talking about data packet or data that they're taking from?
Pull and push.
And push. Yeah. So it's 56 gigabytes of data that was transferred. Okay. Thank you.
So we have users that are heavy bandwidth users. We have light users. So we do a lot of statistical, a lot of video streaming, a lot of real-time video users, Zoom calls and such as well. Just a random sampling. We have a beer garden. We have multiple, but it took one. As you saw in a week, there had almost 800 connections connected while enjoying a beer. And you can see the type of data usage just a beer garden generated. The private resort is a hotel, golf course, ski hill that's local to this area. You can see the type of usage they connected through their venue and the data usage. A public golf course, another public park, and then a public sports facility that has both indoor and outdoor activity. So a sampling of the type of needs the community has been asking for us to try to help and offload. And so each one of these has MWFN fiber facilities built to it for the connectivity, and we do it anywhere between wireless or a combo of both for the end user. Questions? Since this is real data, that was the previous weeks. So as you see, the red is a deduction from the previous week consumption total. And the green is an increase from the previous weeks. So it always goes up and down. But again, this was a snapshot for 1 week, 7 days.
How well advertised is the network provided at all of these places? Is there prominent signage? Are people aware of them? I haven't been to all of them, so I can't answer, but I've just wondered if these numbers would potentially increase with some more awareness or not.
Great question. So again, I'm Matt with Parks. We do have signage that's in each one of the pavilions where we do offer our Wi-Fi. So we have rentable pavilions, for example, at Petrifying Springs Park, which is part of the beer garden, where it's right on front where people can see that that's public free Wi-Fi is available. So anywhere we do have that free Wi-Fi that is advertised, especially where the hubs of the pavilions are, because that's where we have the strongest connection is in, associated with those pavilions. So yes, we do have signage. You bet.
Yeah, got a question about Paris. So you're running the cable to Paris right now. Is most of that underground or is most of that Wi-Fi?
It will be hard fiber connection.
It'll be hard fiber. Okay.
And wireless inside.
Because I know in the county in the western side, it's very hard to get Wi-Fi connectivity from any provider just because of the terrain. So I was just concerned about that.
Current, every home would have access to a hardwired facility.
Yeah. Wouldn't want to come to Brighton, would you?
We can talk. And again, we're excited about the opportunity to work with Paris. I mean, again, Paris was kind enough to invite us in, and we're looking forward to a long partnership with them. And again, I think once we start delivering services, there was a need. I think we had existing infrastructure that we put into the community. It was a logical step for us to expand and make those services available for everyone. As of today, I think early adopters and early requests, I think we're almost at a 37-38% interest rate within the first 2 weeks of market launch.
Again, don't forget about Brighton.
Hopefully we can do it more spots. But, sorry, it's me. You want me to kill it or you gone? yeah, please. This is just a case study with one of our partners that looked at, you know, the need. And I think from your comment, access is available in metro markets, right, in the cities. But what happens when you get outside of city property? And that's what we're trying to work on together. And, you know, that is a there's a need and there's an increased need. Not just in the cities, but everywhere, an entire county, both rural, I would say suburban and city. Currently, right now, as you see in the red square, which is the city of Kenosha, I would say that according to both state and PSC, broadband is available throughout the market because of that proximity. We know that in most of the area, especially west of the freeway, we always receive phone calls and requests for additional services. And again, we're working on answering and coming up with plans and models how to provide that, hopefully as a continuation on what we're doing within Paris. But it's a large parcel.
What's your time frame for Paris?
We start construction. We just received our first permits from the county. Construction starts August 1st, and our goal is to have majority of the completion of the backbone in by year end and services to residents by, you know, middle of next year.
I know my previous residence was in Salem, and I was there when Ingersoll came in and pulled the cables. And that, I thought, went relatively quickly before, and I think Time Warner acquired them shortly thereafter. Ingersoll did most of the work.
Yeah, with community involvement and you know, again, communication, hoping that everything goes smooth. And we're making it available for every home in the area to participate in.
Fiber to the house, then?
We're building fiber to the curb.
To the curb, and then they
have to. And it's up to the resident to subscribe if they choose. But
so it would run like a lateral charge for a sewer hookup, then?
It's case by case.
Okay.
In some of the models, that is included in the monthly subscription, but every house will have a tap in front of it. So, again, the speed to service.
And the cost is determined by the distance to the tap?
That is correct.
Okay.
We can share more information if you like. Again, on the additional slide, it was, again, what we're hearing and what we're seeing with areas without fiber and what opportunities present themselves. One of the case studies also shows that home valuations increase once broadband is made available in the area as well as to the home itself. So it's been a huge impact. Again, there's a lot of discussion that internet services is now your next infrastructure, like gas and electric. It's not just a, you know, foregone, they'll be there. And so the needs and demands have been increasing. I can say that our consumption rates in most of the communities and most of the service providers that we work with that provide services to residential marketplace has continued increasing month after month after month. So it's amazing how much a home can use if given the ability to use it.
Does anyone have any immediate questions for Nick? We wanted to, I had told him some of the areas that we were looking for input from vendors was, were there areas that regulation or other permitting processes went out of slowing down any potential projects? Were there any ways that there could be partnerships explored, like what Paris and Midwest Fiber are doing? Are there other opportunities between communities with Midwest? And then I also asked Nick whether or not these type of meetings are valuable to you as a vendor, or are these more a waste of time? So
a lot of questions in one question. For me as Midwest Fiber, I've been working with municipalities, government, education for a long time. To me as a service provider, the relationships we have with the communities we serve is valuable. And that is the most important thing to have for any service provider, because it assists us in obtaining the permits, right-of-ways, easements, the necessary things that we need to do our job. And also helps answering the questions of the community and having a joint base and force to, if we run into problems, being able to resolve them. The situation, if we just go into a market and do an overbuild and we're fighting the municipality, fighting the city, fighting the town or village, it doesn't go well. And we start having issues.
And Nick, is there any value in having coordinated right-of-way plans or whatnot, in that obviously in more rural areas there's less things that you have to compete with. There tends to be some underground electric, natural gas, and not in all areas, but natural gas, and those are primarily the only things that are in the right-of-way right now. But is there at all a need for coordination of the right-of-way, so that, you know, one of the questions that we're getting now is that ironically in Paris, there are in some places there are going to be two providers where there had been none, and both of them are putting in their own conduit and whatnot. And so, you know, some of you are questioning, is that now going to clutter things up and whatnot? And I was just wondering if there's any value in the community providing any coordination in the use of the right-of-way?
They're both. I think today in most larger metro areas, the right-of-way is exhausted. And so, again, future planning, if you have other public facilities or other facilities going in, the coordination with both municipal services as well as any state or electric public utility services in a right-of-way is very important for everybody. Especially when roads get widened and relocated, that is a benefit to all. In some scenarios, I think the biggest assistance would be is working with the DNR and state level for permitting as well as coordination. For any large undertaking, the local data is very important, and the time it takes engineering resources to come up and put and compile the necessary data to do a project is the biggest drawback for time. Because I know everyone wants it done quickly and as fast as possible to mitigate the construction timeline. A lot of times it just takes a long time to get everything finalized.
Yeah, thank you. Nick, you touched a little bit on alternates, and I assume it's like Starlink that you're referring to on the one slide as an alternate. Are speeds comparable between Starlink and direct fiber?
I wouldn't say they're comparable. I think the Starlink is a good alternative service if you're in areas where it's available and you have access to their satellite streams. Their broadband access, you'll have less than 100 meg in some areas of usable data. The fiber network that we're talking about currently in Paris will be 10 gig capable, and that's symmetrical. And so it's 10 gig up, 10 gig down if someone would like to go to that side. Satellites will not do that.
Then my understanding is satellite has some latency as well, or?
Yes.
And you do not, or you have very low latency?
Very low latency because it's a hardwired connection and on an optical network.
Okay. And then you also mentioned different ways to connect. So it can be hard, it can be Wi-Fi point-to-point, or you have different alternatives to get from the street to the building in some situations. And I'm going to transition that to one area that's on our agenda is looking into how we could provide Wi-Fi in a couple of our parks that I'll call them more rural. I mean, large properties, a lot of roadway, unconnected pavilions, et cetera. Is it more efficient to connect by hard fiber or hard wire than it is to utilize alternate connection sources, or what's your experience?
Showed you some of the data consumption, for example, at some of the marinas. When we originally were asked to help those marinas, as you know, in a marine environment, the slips are not connected to shore, right? They're floating. So what was done was wired connections on the piers themselves with a wireless backhaul. What we saw was when data consumption usage started increasing, the wireless backhaul network failed. And without the optimal speed on the wireless backhaul network, all the infrastructure, the Wi-Fi connections, and the complaints just skyrocketed because there was no backhaul. And so what we did is we do a combination. So in some of these environments, it's fiber to the closest offload location, which gives us an unlimited backbone, per se. We can control that by the equipment that we put there. If we need more speed, we can ratchet it up. We increase the wireless backhaul capacity to allow for that connection to the wired network out at the slips. We also do that at one of the private venues. We've hardwired everything except some of the remote sites where we couldn't get to economically, and we did a point-to-point bridge between those, and it works well.
Okay, so combination of things. One, build a superhighway, but drive a Model A on it. That's probably not very practical, right?
Sure.
Okay. And the reason I asked the question on the wire is I know somebody tried to pull fiber optic through my street in Brighton and ran into a lot of rock and gave up, and all they did was bust drain tiles and walked away. So, that's intriguing. So for my understanding and awareness, it's beneficial to understand how we might find the most efficient manner to equip some of our parks. And Veterans Memorial is one where it's easy to pull. We have long runs that are pretty connected, and we can get there in a hurry. Silver Lake may be a little bit more difficult. So just looking to understand opportunities for how we do it in the most efficient way.
Yeah. I would always say if you're making the investment, as long as the backbone infrastructure supports that future need and you have the ability to do it, put the infrastructure in place today the first time, and then look at if you want to offload or add additional capacity, it's easier. I would say in our world as a service provider, the problem is if it doesn't work,
yeah.
as you the complaints and calls skyrocket. And the concern is everybody wants it, and everyone wants it to work when they want it to work. And having to go through a new network design, acquisition, new hardware, a new product, all because of a backbone link being saturated. And also, some of the hardware out there is not, there are different price points for certain reasons. Some of the hardware is good, some of the hardware is acceptable, but if you're going to invest in it, it's going to be an investment. It's you're not going to go to Home Depot and buy one, and or Best Buy and put it up and they just support an entire park.
Discount may not be best. And then the last question is on longevity. Once we pull fiber, what is the life cycle of that fiber?
Fiber's been in the ground since the early 70s and still in use.
So perpetual almost. I don't want to make it that long, but
as long as the outer sheath is not damaged in any way due to construction or digging, rodent issues, the life of the fiber is, I would say, 40 to 50 years.
Okay.
So the equipment will be replaced multiple times before the fiber itself will.
But it's along the appreciation curve for the fiber itself. Thank you.
Just as a point of clarification, we now have enough people here. We do have a quorum of the committee. I want to welcome Sherry and the committee. I'm John Holloway, the chair, and welcome. So that everyone, our newest member here, Sherry. So.
Can I say one thing?
Sure, you're right.
Sherry, you're
right.
I apologize for the delay. I feel so dumb this morning because I went to the Kenosha City office looking for this meeting. So please forgive my tardiness, and I try my best not to happen again. And thank you for welcoming me.
Absolutely.
Not the first to do that, I
Yes. Yeah. And if any committee member wants any more detailed information on some of the data that was shared, I'm glad to have a conversation and can go and provide the location and the venue, or even if necessary, if they would like to see it or talk to the venue themselves.
Sorry. Kind of the last thing here is that from a vendor looking at the community at large, are there any projects that you look at and say, I think that would have a real benefit to the community? This is something that would, but it just economically just doesn't work. Do any of those type of things occur to you when you're looking at Kenosha County as a community?
Another loaded question. Oh, again, we've looked at and been requested by a lot of the communities around to try to help them with both digital divide, access to alternative broadband in areas west of the freeway. And as we all know, the economics and the modeling of that is sometimes challenging based upon the spacing and the size and the makeup of the communities. Again, as Midwest Fiber, I think if the county came together and worked with the underlying communities as a whole, I think the economics would make sense that way, but doing onesie twosie projects sometimes are challenging based upon densities and the necessary construction. Yes, some will have rocks, some will have sand, some will have dirt. It's a mixed bag. But I think, again, that would be the best, is if there's a single, countywide agreement with a single voice that covers all members.
And Mike Ulecki from Uline, a member of the committee, had shared with us at our last meeting that he didn't necessarily feel the committee needed to focus on the I-94 corridor and business per se, because businesses generally have the ability to either locate where they know a good broadband exists, or they have the ability to get broadband to come to them. Is that a fairly accurate assessment?
I think large business has that ability. So I think the question would be is clarifying the type of business. A large company like Uline probably has enough need and demand where the private sector could get a utility to build in for that based upon the either the revenue commitment or the needs that they have. What we're seeing and what we're trying to address is the small business and the business owner that during COVID transitioned from a physical address to working out of their home and still needing to provide services or access to data that doesn't exist. And so we're seeing a lot of more of those requests all over our footprint, where folks are just saying, and that's why we as Midwest Fiber started and got into the fiber to the home business, because we kept getting more and more and more requests where communities continued coming to us and said, we have nobody. Where in some scenarios, homeowners were either on copper still or had no access at all, and they were on a wireless connection of a provider, and there was best effort where it may or may not work, and they're trying to run a business. It wasn't to their liking. So, yes, I think larger businesses have that flexibility. We are, as a service provider, we have been fortunate to be introduced to some of the large businesses in the area, and we've been able to provide services to them based upon their needs. But again, some of the medium and small businesses in pockets, that's been the challenge.
Does anyone else have any follow-up questions or comments here? If not, Nick, thank you so much for coming in. Yep. Appreciate it, and it will and continue to be in touch with you. So,
very good. Thank you very much for the invite. Thank you. Have a great day.
Thanks.
Good.
I guess with the fact that we now have established a quorum, I would go back to item number 3, the minutes for the previous meeting. If we would be open to a motion to approve them as presented.
I make a motion to approve as presented.
Okay. There is a motion by Margaret and a second by Michael to approve the minutes as presented. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Thank you. Then we will move to item number 5 on the agenda, which was the review for recommendations, proposals on Wi-Fi and security camera solutions in the county parks. Item A was the proposal to approve and recommend to the county administration the installation of Wi-Fi and security enhancements at Kemper Center and Anderson Arts Center. A couple of things on that is that Matt, if can you come and kind of give us just a real quick refresher at all, or Sean will do that? Okay.
Hi, thanks for having me. I, for those of you who don't know, I'm Sean Smith. I'm the CIO for Kenosha County. We've been working with Matt Collins, the director of parks. So if you have any questions about things specific to the parks or the facilities that exist at the parks, let us know. Matt will be happy to come up and join us and answer any questions. Really, I'm here to present and talk a little bit about the technology that's going to be that we're presenting and asking to get funding for. So I thought this was a great picture. It shows the three areas that we're looking to put the connectivity in. Thanks to Joe for the pictures. So Joe, if you go to the next slide. The summary here, the goals for this project are to provide free broadband internet access at the county, at these county facilities. These are highly used parks throughout our park system. They're heavily frequented. They have a variety of connectivity issues at each park. They all have their own particular challenges, and we think that providing the free internet Wi-Fi connection there is going to be useful to the community. And I think it's really important to note the geographic diversity of this. One is on the lakefront all the way down in the city of Kenosha. The next one's about halfway out into the county at Old Settlers Park. And the last is Silver Lake Park, which is very west in the county. I think that's a really important part of what we're looking at here. We're also, we believe it's a valuable amenity that's going to benefit our park systems in general. There's a lot of other things that we will be able to do if we have this installed. It's going to enable additional services such as vendor connections, smart technologies. Matt, since Matt's joined the county, we've expanded what we do in our parks, and we've attracted some very great partnerships like the Beer Garden Out of Pets, Boundless Adventures. Those services, when they come in, they absolutely are looking for broadband connectivity. They want to put in security cameras. They have point of sale systems. There's a lot of things that they're doing at the parks that this benefits, in addition to providing the broadband access. It's going to increase engagement with the community. I know that I remember when Matt's predecessor was here, and the first time we were talking about Wi-Fi out at Petrifying Springs, and he said people shouldn't be looking at their phones. They should be looking and enjoying the park. I agree, but that's not everyone. And we do have a generation coming that is highly connected, and having this type of feature and amenity at the park does help to attract those people as well. And the reality is, you know, it might sound weird, but it's great advertising for the parks a lot of times, because when people are out there and they post to whatever social media they're using, that post and people, their friends' network see it, they're going to be able to share the things that they're enjoying at the parks. So, and I already mentioned the geographic diversity. Some of the benefits, I mean, there's a lot of things that happen at parks and that the Wi-Fi can help. You can, you know, I just did a quick search. I looked at some of the activities people are taking advantage of when you have these kind of amenities. Geocaching, scavenger hunt, and I know you can do a scavenger hunt without Wi-Fi, but there are things that people do and leverage it to take advantage of it. Augmented reality. I don't know how many people did a lot of the board participate in Pokemon Go. You're out getting the Pokemon all over the place. There was a number of people in IT that did. And you know where people went a lot of times was to parks. The parks were where, because it was a publicly accessible space, so when they would do these things with Pokemon Go, that's an example of you are creating that for the people that are there. If there is no connectivity, they can't do what it is that they're doing to catch the Pokemon, whatever it was. So it creates opportunities for real-time feedback. We have the opportunity to let people report when there's an issue at a park. If you're at a park and you don't have any connectivity, you may not have the opportunity to take a picture of right where you are, maybe get the exact geolocation tagged for that photo, and have it uploaded to a parks application. We would be adding infrastructure for future expansion of dependent services. The county is no different than any other organization. You try to do as much with the money that you have as possible. And there's no doubt that creating this infrastructure opens us up for a lot of other opportunities to add services throughout the parks. So one of the things we didn't talk a lot about, but is absolutely a part of what's being presented and requested here, is security cameras. There is no doubt within our park system that security has become a significant concern. We're experiencing a lot of vandalism. We're dealing with general misbehavior. There might be theft. When we put in the, again, I'm going back to when we did this at Petrifying Springs Park. That was the first park that we put an extensive Wi-Fi network in. And I remember we were doing that, and there was a lot of questions. You know, people are really going to be able to get anything. I don't know how many, I don't have a count, and Matt might be able to speak to it, but that camera system is used extensively by our sheriff's department, by parks. We're able to identify people that have done things. Even one of the biggest issues that we were dealing with at the time was dumping. The number of people that would go out and dump, and I remember talking to some of the administration after we got those in, and how they heard from waste management, because they gained a whole lot of new customers because there were that many people that were dumping in the park, and they had to go and get their waste management contract instead once we were able to track those things. So there's a lot of benefits that go into this beyond just the Wi-Fi and internet. So I wanted to show this map. This is the county map, the speed test map that was taken just this morning. So you can see the colors might be a little more washed out here, but do you see all the red dots? Those are people that don't have great internet connectivity. The black dots are people who have reported no internet connectivity. This is a 7% representation of the county. When you expand that to the entire county, you're going to see substantially more black and red dots as we continue to build that knowledge. And it's not always just about does someone have access. And Nick mentioned bridging the digital divide. And I'm not going to be going deep into that today, but it is a reality that there are people that, hey, you know, I've got a cell phone. I'm very lucky that I've got an unlimited data plan on it. There's a lot of people that don't. And it's especially that economic disparity where you see people with very limited data plans and they rely on areas where there are free Wi-Fi, and having the opportunity to go, having more spaces to go and access that is an important service. And providing that, especially west of the interstate, is especially valuable because there aren't as many businesses available that are providing that kind of service. And I did want to update, if you can see it, the total households in Kenosha, 72,000. Our target for data collection to get to that really great statistically significant number is 10%. So that's 7,200. We're currently at 7%. We have kind of hit a little bit of a lull here. So it's going to be important that we start to re-engage and figure out how do we get to that 10% and how do we really start to understand some of the things happening in our community. And I did want to also share, we're not plowing new ground here. We're not the first people that have provided it in parks. This is a map taken from the PSC. This is all self-reported data. So there's more than what you see on this presentation. But you can see it's a little washed out, but there's a lot of orange up there. There's a lot of blue up there. Those are public institutions that are providing free Wi-Fi. And depending on where you're going and what the accessibility is, this is a good representation. Again, it is self-reported, so there might be more. I suppose there could be less as well. If you go to this map, you can actually get, when you click on the dot, it'll give you the information about the particular location as well. So we're not blazing a new trail. This is something that is fairly common. I didn't do a ton of research into it, but I would tell you, the city of Green Bay just recently, they use their CARES funding. So that's different than the ARPA, but they built Wi-Fi in four parks in the city of Green Bay. That project was $253,000. And then the city of Milwaukee built it in 10 parks. I don't have the number for that one, and I don't know exactly how they chose to fund it, but they were building it in 10 parks. So any questions on any of the general information so far?
Sean, if we're part of this, would be encouraging people who currently don't have good internet access to potentially use public. At the same time, most of us are being advised to avoid doing anything sensitive when you're on public Wi-Fi because it's not as secure. It will the system, at least at the county facilities, will you have software? Will you have anything that will make this a little bit more secure than to the average user?
Yes. And I can't give you all of the technical details. If we need to, Angie could speak to that a little more. But what I can tell you is, when you join a public Wi-Fi, you're all using the same password to connect to that. So then everyone on that network sort of can, you know, you're on this shared network. And one of the things that we use in the technology we're using, it isolates every every person on that network. So they're not on a shared network. They are, but their traffic isn't shared. They are sort of on their own. So that protects people with ours. And just as general public awareness for anyone who's listening, I advocate this all the time. They sell VPNs that people can buy. This is just a public service announcement. They're very inexpensive, maybe $100 a year for the safety that that brings, but that encrypts all of your traffic, regardless if you're on a Wi-Fi network that everything is shared. It encrypts all of your traffic so that nobody else on that network can see anything that you're doing. So I just wanted to give that little plug. So yes, we do provide that additional layer of security also. Any other questions before I move on? Okay, terrific. So for Kemper, what we're looking to do at Kemper, we're going to provide Wi-Fi and broadband internet service to the northwest and south grass field areas of Kemper Center. We're also providing it to the north side and south field of Anderson Art Center. We'll install a limited number of outdoor security cameras in high impact areas. And then all Wi-Fi and cameras will observe the historic needs of the building and grounds. That's pretty critical in those two buildings. They do have a historic nature to them, and we need to observe those. Some additional benefits. This would provide us the infrastructure that would allow adding cell phone boosters to the grounds. So even if I add Wi-Fi to Anderson Art Center, and we cell phone, Wi-Fi calling for cell phones, that doesn't work great. As soon as they put it in their pocket, their Wi-Fi turns off, they get disconnected, they don't know. And we actually have been talking about this for almost a year with Midwest Fiber, who they offer, it's a 35-foot pole we would need to install, and then it adds a cell phone booster, and I believe it improves it for everyone but Verizon. Is that Verizon? Just they're a little bit, their network's a little more unique and different than the other carriers. So it allows us to be able to install that. It would also let us expand Wi-Fi within Kemper Center and Anderson Arts. That's not a core element of this, but with the infrastructure there, we're able to expand in those ways. So this just, I think, if you were here last time, you saw this. This shows the coverage area for all of the different areas. The area names are just for our reference more than anything else. This provides the Wi-Fi. So on the left there, that's Kemper Center, and on the right, that's Anderson Arts. And if you see the to the north of Anderson Arts, that's that huge field between Kemper Center and Anderson Arts. It used to be soccer field. Now they have, I don't know all the events they have there. They used to have some car shows. They had market type things or fairs. There's a lot of things. I don't know if they still have the band boosters over there. I used to go to the ice cream social there all the time, many years. So that shows you what we're talking about at Kemper. Do you have any questions on it?
The use of the ARPA money, though, will be for the fiber, the cameras and some of the components will actually be funded through budgeting. Is that?
That was what we talked about last time. And then Patty actually really helped us understand a little bit better what we could do with our ARPA funds. So I'll just kind of, if you're okay with it, I'll just kind of put a pause on the parks for a minute and talk about the ARPA funds. So when ARPA funds came in and they were allocated for countywide broadband, there is $500,000 one year and then $1.5 million approved by the county board the following year. It gave us a total of $2 million for ARPA funds for countywide broadband. Since that time, we've spent some of that funding. It's not that much, but we did the marketing campaign to help distribute and let people know about the speed test. When Joe and I or other people spend time working on the broadband project, we're able to charge our salaries to that grant fund, some things like that. And then also, that's also paying for the Wi-Fi that's being installed out at the Veterans Memorial Park as well. So as we were going through the process with ARPA funds, we talked to the county executive and we identified that $800,000 would be put to the broadband committee for recommendations on how to spend that money. And when we look at how we can spend that money, originally, if you looked at ARPA funding and you looked at the broadband, there was a very narrow use of that money. It had to be some pretty specific ways. And after we've talked more with Patty, one of the things that the county's done is they've gone through an assessment and identified that we have funds that can be spent based on lost revenue, right, Patty? So since it's lost revenue, we have a little more capability of how or flexibility in how we spend that money. So it doesn't have to be as narrow. So now we can add in the security cameras as part of the project. So when we get to the, you know, the last page with the number on it, you'll see that it's gone up, but that's because we've added in the security cameras. And then as far as the other million, if you have any, that's something that the county executive is still reviewing. And if you have any questions about that, it would be best to direct those to county executive.
And the other question I have, Sean, is the actual providing of the broadband, the connectivity, is that going to be making use at all of the system that the city of Kenosha is putting in with SiFi, and that the county would just be contracting, you know, being a customer, or is this are we talking about a dedicated, you know, system, county system to the park?
This is all dedicated county system. So to give a little perspective on it, the SiFi project, we still have very little visibility into exactly what's happening with that. But more importantly, Kemper Center as a county building already has connectivity, fiber connectivity to our network. So as far as the Kemper project goes, we've already got some great connectivity at that building. We need to extend it over to Anderson Arts, and we're working on making sure we do that in the least impactful way to their building. And then we need to buy the access points, and there's a little more challenges. And when you're, since it's not a typical county building that has connectivity everywhere, we might have to spend a little bit more on pulling the cable and those kind of activities. But otherwise, we're already very well connected there.
I did reach out. I spoke with City Administrator John Morrissey. He put me in touch with Tony Stuper from the city, who is coordinating with SiFi for the city. They will have SiFi will be installing fiber on the east side of 3rd Avenue past Kemper this fall. I didn't know whether you needed that to hook on or whether you already had dedicated fiber. So
yes, we do already have the fiber there. Okay, Old Settlers Park. So we just built this terrific band shell out there. We want to provide Wi-Fi service to the band shell area, the pavilion, the dog park, and there's a kind of open field on the east in the beach area. That's where we'd be targeting for the Wi-Fi to be provided. We want to install a limited number of security cameras in the high impact areas. We're not looking for some massively robust security camera solution. We want to make sure that we have reasonable coverage of the parking lot, some areas of that nature. And then some additional benefits, provide infrastructure to expand security cameras if it's needed. If we have a vendor who goes out there and wants to start providing services, that might be something we need to do. And then provide point of sale, our infrastructure for point of sale and vendor systems. And the next slide will show the areas that are to be covered by Wi-Fi, everything in the yellow polygons there.
Sean, a quick question for you. When you're providing Wi-Fi, I mean, it's certainly not restricted to the areas within yellow, but those are the areas that you want to make sure you have coverage. But from a Wi-Fi location, it's circumferential as long as it's not intruded on, right? Or is it directional?
Both. It just depends on the access point that gets installed. Some access points are omnidirectional, where it's the entire area around it, and then some, they're sector-based, where they're targeting a specific area. It's a stronger signal in that area, and it also offers more range. So we It just depends on, I don't know exactly which one goes at each place here, but if you look at like the area there for Old Settlers Park for the dog, this is the dog park area, and somewhere like that, we're probably going to be installing near the parking lot. It doesn't show the parking lot, but the parking lot's going to have Wi-Fi coverage as well. So to your point, it's going to cover more, but those were the areas where we said we need to provide coverage in these areas.
Yeah, Mike, I don't want to come off sounding crass, but if we put Wi-Fi in and all of a sudden I'll pick on Paddock Lake Clinic says, hey, free Wi-Fi, we can drop ours. So we don't become a benefactor, but we are providing a service, which I appreciate.
And we see where we have reports that show us if we're seeing an unusually large amount of data from a particular client. And when we've run into those instances in the past, we will usually either step down that particular person because, you know, they must be doing something a little more than just casual use, or we can blacklist them where they're not allowed on at all. But usually just stepping them down still gives them access if they need it, but it's not something they want to replace their normal service with either. Okay, Silver Lake Park. So this is the big one. From a cost and effort perspective, this is really the big one. So this core project is to provide Wi-Fi and broadband internet service to the beach house. We're replacing and upgrading something we have there now, Shelter B and Shelter C. And the next page will show a map. Install security cameras to all Wi-Fi locations and the park entrance. Install fiber connections to Silver Lake Tower, providing high-speed internet connection and a connection to the county fiber ring. And that connection to the fiber ring is important, not just for what we're doing here. Another major benefit of it is it connects that tower, which we have public safety communications going through. Those are a microwave that goes from that tower to the tower here. And this provides the fiber connection so that we now have a redundant link to that tower. All the rest of our towers that we have one here at KCC, we've got one at 60th Street, they have microwave connectivity between the towers and down to the public safety building, but they also have a fiber connection so that if anything happens to that microwave, we've got another way to keep that communication live. And this would allow us to connect that tower, which due to the cost of pulling the fiber in at the time, it was just prohibitive in relation to the rest of the project. So now this gives us the opportunity to get connected. And why it's possible now has been a lot of work between Angie's team and Nick with Midwest Fiber and finding an alternate path versus what we had originally planned. So there's a path that wasn't considered before. We know we have to work through DNR state, but they've already indicated that they'll work with us on it. We have to work on getting some easements put together and a little bit of work like that. But now it's very much more affordable, which is a huge difference for us. And it's what really has made this very possible for us. And so some other benefits would be provide infrastructure to improve existing point of sale systems at the beach, but also in other areas of the park, providing infrastructure for those other areas. And then also that redundant link that I was talking about. I can't stress how big a deal that would be for public safety. And before I leave the topic of public safety, I did want to touch on anytime the county establishes a high-speed connection somewhere within the county, it doesn't always get thought of, but it is an important factor in public safety because you don't know what might happen. So when we experienced we went through the riots down in the city, all the civil unrest that was going on, and we were all dealing with that, Sheriff's Department and law enforcement really needed to move out of the public safety building. That wasn't a reliable place for them to operate from. There's too much activity there. If they needed to mobilize, they needed to have larger operations, whatever was going on. And they moved to Bradford High School. And when they moved to Bradford High School, So I don't know what the typical time to get, I can't say what a normal time to get fiber installed is, but I can tell you it's not overnight. And because we had connectivity, we work with the Kenosha Unified School District, who's also on the same fiber ring that we are. We're able pretty much overnight to work with Midwest Fiber, and we got a full-blown fiber connected setup to our network, and it fully mobilized law enforcement at that time. And if we ever have an incident that comes up, the SMC, the Sheriff's Mobile Command Unit for Emergency Response, it has cellular connectivity. That is not the same as fiber connectivity, because it depends on where you're at, what kind of capabilities you have. And if they need to mobilize in a different area, we have the capabilities of connecting them high speed to our network. And I mean, that really extends what we can provide, because then they're on the phone system. They're connected to high speed connection to all of the services that they're consuming as technology services. So I can't stress that is a huge benefit as well. And if you look at the next
slide, just piggyback on that for a second? As a school official and looking at your picture there, I'm sure there's many, probably Bristol students and Kenosha County students at the beach in other ways. And as we all know, they can often wander off, end up in places that aren't safe. And a perfect example of that is we had a performance at school, and a young lady wasn't answering her cell phone, and dad became very worried and wasn't sure where she was. We were able to, with our new upgraded security system that we have, we put in Verkada cameras, which are top of the line. We were able to recognize the young lady, get facial recognition. I met the sheriff's department at school. Within 15 minutes, they were able to be deployed with a picture of the young lady, be in contact with parents, and locate her safely at a friend's house. So just in that instance, in the $100,000 that we spent, knowing that 12-year-old little girl was safe, for us as parents, taxpayers, community members, and everything else, is well worth it in my mind.
Thank you. So this is the map for Silver Lake Park. It shows, there's a couple of different maps that show you how we're going to get connectivity, but this one on the right shows, I'm not trying to act like this is an easy project or that anything about this one's going to be simple. The reality is we're trying to provide coverage to different areas in a heavily wooded, mature park with trees that are extremely tall. The reason that we've looked to use fiber in this instance is we've got a 199-foot tower on the highest point at Silver Lake Park, and it still doesn't have line of sight from there down to the beach house because of the obstruction of the trees. That was our first thought. We wanted to use wireless in order to achieve that goal. It just ended up not being realistic for us. And those trees are just going to continue to grow. So then we can't just keep it going up the tower, because we were assessing it pretty much from the top of the tower already. The alternative could be that we would build a tower down by the beach house or all the other areas, but those towers would also have to be so tall to get above the tree line. So we definitely look at any time we can, if we can make the best use of funds by using wireless technology, just like Nick was talking about, where, you know, he gets to a certain point, but then he might offload that network connectivity using wireless. We do the same thing. It's just in this case, we haven't found it to be an effective opportunity or, you know, a solution for us. So we go to the next page, the estimated investment. So Kemper and Anderson Art Center, that price is a little different than what you saw before. We're saying it's $60,000. Right now, the plan would be to not put the fiber in, because we were originally going to get fiber to go from Kemper to Anderson Art Center. And after talking to Matt, there's confidence, and he's talked to the historical community. I don't know what the proper title is. And we can put something on the building. We just have to camouflage it, make it blend as much as possible, and not be ridiculous. And these wireless solutions are this big nowadays, and they paint. So long as you don't put chromatic paint on it, you know, it's, you're fine. It doesn't affect the signal. So knowing that we can do that now, we scaled that back. We did add in a little extra cost so that we can install cameras in some of the places because there is a need to have cameras. So there are some cameras at Kemper Center already, but now that we're expanding where we've got this technology and these solutions, we're also going to expand the cameras. Old Settlers Park is $50,000. That is mostly getting the fiber into the park and pulling the cable to the different places where we'll mount the wireless access points, security cameras. So this is for the Wi-Fi and the infrastructure. Just to kind of give you, if you ever go out to Midwest, and I bring them up, they built our fiber network, the same one that KUSD uses and Gateway Technical College uses. And it goes pretty extensively throughout the county. So they do go straight in front of Old Settlers, but we still, there's still a cost to, from pulling the fiber in from the point where they can tap off of that fiber. So that's what's at Old Settlers Park. And then Silver Lake Park is $185,000. This is fiber to and through the park, Wi-Fi and infrastructure and security cameras. The cost for Silver Lake Park is significant, there's no doubt, but it's also a park that is heavily used in the summer. I don't know how many of you get out to Silver Lake Park. I've been out there a couple of times this year just to take a look at some things that are out there, and it's the middle of the day, and there's a constant stream of people coming in. So it is a heavily used park. So some additional investments, as we are expanding the number of cameras that we're using, we also have to expand the storage that we have. We currently have, we're at about our capacity. We have a little bit more room, but we are at about our capacity for storing the way we need to store our data, which is different than some other people. I'm also asking that we add in the cost of the Veterans Memorial Park cameras. That was something that when we started Veterans Memorial Park, we didn't have that same knowledge that we could have included the security camera. So I'm asking that we get that included as well. And then I just wanted to say a few optional things that aren't in the total price. We might look at some funding for appropriate signage advertising services. I think someone asked that earlier, how much signage there was. And just making sure that we have the ability to add the signage. Parks mobile applications, leveraging the infrastructure. This one's a little more long-term, but the ability to, the last meeting, someone asked about the parking at Old Settlers. And when I was looking up uses of Wi-Fi in parks, I was surprised to find a number of articles that all referenced active view of parking lots to see how busy they are. I had no idea. That meeting was, I was like, oh, I didn't know that was such a big thing. Apparently it really is. I just had no idea. So leveraging technology to promote additional county and park services, and then adding infrastructure to improve cell phone signals and phone calls. So I would say, is anyone here a Harley person? I'm not, but I guess there's some big party out at Petrifying Springs tonight. And I can tell you that having Wi-Fi out there, there are people that are going to be using it. That usage will spike so long as people know and see that they've got freely accessible. Because if I don't know how many of you spent time in Petrifying Springs, but you can have three or four bars of service, step 5 feet to the left, and you've got no service. So having the Wi-Fi, and it doesn't cover the entire park. I don't want to give the wrong impression, but all of the pavilions have it. So that's that kind of brings me to the end. It doesn't. I did want to talk about the security cameras. We get a lot of questions about security cameras. People they don't necessarily know what we as the county say this is what we have to do for security cameras. When we put in a security camera, we require that it records 24/7. There is never a time that our cameras are turned off. If there is no activity, we go down to 1 frame per second. As soon as it detects activity, it goes up to like 15 or 20 frames per second, which is a normal view then. We do that because there are too many times, and this is, you know, you can look at anything in legal record or legal cases on this. People have said, well, you didn't have a recording of what happened there. Your camera may have just malfunctioned, and they can, that's a loophole for people. So any best practice, you record all the time. We retain 131 days of video footage. The county records retention requires that we retain 120 days, and we choose to record 131 days and keep it because sometimes a request for that might not come in until the 120th day, and we do need a little bit of time to make sure we can get the footage. We require centralized storage and management. We have, in the county, we've got 750-plus cameras. And if we had to log into multiple systems, and the sheriff's department especially, they have to, oh, I need something for human services. I got to go to this system, and I got to go over to this one. It's too much. It is so much better to have it all in the same place for them. We need role-based and granular security. We need to say, this person, you know, maybe it's someone who works on the facility staff. They need to be able to view real-time what's happening on the security cameras, but they don't need to have a historical view, or they don't need to be able to export the video footage. And then we also have to have activity logging. If we, you know, everyone's seen different things where information gets out that you wish it hadn't, and then there's always the search for how that information got out. If we ever saw some of our footage get released, we would have the opportunity to go back and look at, oh, who exported this data? And that's another huge benefit. And if you have multiple systems that are doing it, trying to consolidate and identify that can be incredibly challenging. Saying all of that, there are some technology considerations I wanted to advise you on. We're always looking at the solutions that we have, and we try to find the best solutions for the best cost. I know there's been questions, especially when we go to parks, there's a lot of questions on using solar-powered and cellular-connected cameras, and they are terrific solutions. We have to find the ones that we can only place them where there's sun, and in parks, the reality is there's frequently trees that are covering it. So we need that. We also have to make sure that there's decent cellular connectivity at that location so that you have – there's a difference between one bar of connectivity and four bars, right? So we also have to be careful of that. And then we also need to find a solution that fits into the overall solution that we're using so that we don't end up with a very widely distributed set of cameras where maybe just this one camera – we may have saved a little bit on some of the initial installation, but longer term, we're not saving the money. And then we're also looking at fiber wireless connectivity options. Right now, we use Meraki. Angie's team is looking at other alternatives. Some of what we've seen, we're finding comes at a lower cost with just as good of capabilities. And we're going to be doing some testing on that as well. So we do constantly look and review at any of the technology solutions that we propose. So the total investment, it's $378,000, which I know that's a big number, but I genuinely feel that the level of service and features that we get out of this it really justifies the use of the funds. And I know we talked a little bit about ARPA funds, and I just wanted to remind everyone, the ARPA funds, just kind of, we want to spend those by the end of 2024. That's the deadline is to spend the funds by the end of 2024 or have them contractually obligated by the end of 2026. But there is some reason to think it's better to have expended those funds by the end of 2024. So any questions, anything I can help with?
I've got a question. On your camera storage, is it cloud-based or do you have your own data center?
We have our own data center right now. We've been Jack brought up Verkada. We've been talking to them. We have a new building. So one of the challenges for us is with such a large deployment of cameras and not wanting to have it become fragmented, we try to make sure that we would have an opportunity to replace something in total. So we've got a quote from Verkada right now. What we're seeing at the moment is the cost for us to go to Verkada over a 10-year period was significantly higher than the solution that we've got now. But we're still investigating Verkada, working on getting some cameras in from them, because they're one of the most well-known.
So you don't use the Meraki cloud-based storage of their cameras?
We do not, no. Okay.
If I may, I thank you. Number one, Sean, you've answered a number of questions that I asked last time, so I appreciate that very, very much. Couple of things. One is to Patty, on the application of the ARPA funds, and it's not on our docket today specifically, but we have the Paris project with Midwest Solar. If we were to do, I'll call it extensions to that, could we apply ARPA funds to extensions on that project to pick up some of our severely underserved areas? Well, I said, I'm sorry. Midwest Fiber in Paris. That's the other Paris project.
Yes, the ARPA funds could be used to do an extension. I don't know what the cost involved in that would be, if we have sufficient funds available for that or not.
Yeah, but it sounds like right now we have approximately $1 million of residual of the $2 million initial. We're at 1.8 now and reducing with this project. So
again, you'd need to talk to the county executive to see what her thoughts are on those funds, since the committee was given the authority over $800,000.
Okay. Thank you. That helps. I asked the question about monitoring. These are unmonitored systems, so we're recording for, I'll call it post-incident review and response, not for active security measures.
Yes. We have the capability of monitoring them real time. So if there was an active situation going on, the Sheriff's Department could pull up that security camera and monitor it in real time, but we don't have staff to watch them regularly.
Are we considering any type of, I'll call it a gate attendance? In other words, park closes, and I'm thinking specifically of Veterans Memorial right now, park closes after hours, vehicle goes through, motion sensor says, hey, something's happening, then we could go to active monitoring to understand? Or is there something like that in planned in the install?
There's nothing like that planned in the install, but with a couple of other technologies that we have a lot of capability to implement something like that, where the question on those type of things is always, where does the notification go?
Yeah.
So we just have to find someone willing to take the notification and do something with it most of the time.
Yeah, that's one thing, you're touching 10, so. No, I appreciate that, but once fiber's in, we would have potential to consider alternate.
Yes, absolutely. Cases.
Okay. And then fourth thing I just did for myself, I just made a little matrix out of it between Kemper, Silver Lake, Settlers, and Vets, and I looked at it from a couple of perspectives. So the first one is value of properties. Kemper is high-value real estate. We own some... I don't want to call them irreplaceable, but certainly precious properties there that we need to protect. So I would say they're very, very high on the value of the real estate. Silver Lake, a little less so. If we lost a boathouse, it's not going to cost the county $1 million. So Settlers, we built the new pavilion, which has a value. It's not excessive, but in the overall scheme, it's not excessive, but we want to protect it. And Vets Memorial, we do have properties out there, and we know for a fact we need to do more to protect. So that was one. The second attribute I looked at was people. Kemper is a very high density, high use property. When we have the marketplace or other activities there, there are a lot of people on those grounds. So to me, it becomes a priority for Kemper. We do need to protect that property or have visibility on that property throughout, and also provide services to it. Silver Lake, we have a lot of people there as well, especially in the summertime, and I have another attribute in a second. Settlers, I'll call it sporadic based on event or activity that's happening. So Oktoberfest, very, very high. Vest Memorial, still low, but growing. So as far as people use, alternate use, again, Kemper, alternate use like might be food trucks, business, food, beer gardens, things like that. Kemper, very high. Silver Lake, I'd say medium, but perhaps Matt will plan things in the future there, food trucks and things like that. So that might happen. Settlers, it's actually alternate use is pretty high if we think about what we do on that property. So between concerts and other venue acts. And Vets, you may not think about it, but wedding venues certainly is probably pretty high. We do have the Harley-Davidson folks out there right now. So we have a lot of alternate use things. But the most compelling to me in my matrix is risk. Kemper, we have water. Silver Lake, water. Settlers, water. Vets, water. Water is a high-risk environment, and having the ability to provide some monitoring perhaps is an opportunity. You can't have lifeguards everywhere, but it might be an area. So to me, I'm thinking from that perspective. But all told, low, medium, and high, they all come out awash. These are critical structures for the county, critical venues that we do need to provide a better level of security measure, whether it's pre or post incident, doesn't matter. But we need to take a much more introspective method of protecting the properties and protecting our citizens, as well as the other caveat is then providing accessibility and usability to our citizens for the parks.
Brian, if I can just interject here a moment, is that we're up against our 11:30 deadline for these meetings, we have other people have meetings to get to here. So my question to the committee here is, do we have time to go a few more minutes here? Do we need to table this and move on to another time, or are people prepared to make a motion and make a recommendation? I'm sorry. Keep going. Okay.
Yes.
Very good. Go ahead, Brian. Thank you.
That was a very kind way of telling me that I'd say too much. But all in summary, looking at what you've presented, what we presented last time, the information that we have available, I made a commentary. I didn't ask a question, so I believe I can still make a motion, correct? Okay. So I would like to put a motion on the table and adapt it as you see fit, but a motion to recommend to the county executive that we do proceed forward with all three A, B, and C projects, as well as the ancillaries associated with it, investment value of $378,000 to provide the safety, security, and accessibility that is designed to occur with these projects. So motion is to recommend to the county executive to move forward with all three projects.
I'll second that.
Thank you. There's a motion and a second to advance a recommendation to the county administration on the proposals. Is there discussion?
Yeah, I did a little bit of research and looking at how the younger generations tentatively have a higher percentage access to either smartphones at the 95th percentile, and older adults or older generations are a little bit less, as well as those in high poverty areas or certain demographics. It was in 2016, the Human Rights Council of the United Nations passed a resolution declaring connectivity to the internet as a basic human right, as necessary as reliable electricity or safe roads. A few years later, the National Recreation and Parks Association promoted a article to recommend and urge parks and recreational areas to expand Wi-Fi connectivity as a equitable means to address the digital divide across those generations. And you obviously presented a lot of well thought out recommendations for all of these projects, and some that were reiterated by members of this council, but I think all three are high quality usage and tremendous opportunity for the local community as well, and not just business related, but educational, and certainly beyond the augmented reality of Pokemon, where my involvement was more my kids, but there's other celestial or landscape apps or wildlife or fishery ones that would lend themselves to utilizing a phone as an additional means and a utility to expand that enjoyment and opportunity, whether it's for educational or recreational purposes, and not just expect people to sit on their phones the whole time, but certainly learn and grow and address the educational needs, which ultimately lend themselves to better percentages of addressing that digital divide and addressing poverty type needs. And at the moment, if we can't have a project that gets quality broadband internet access affordable to every household, at least we can address the need where we have accessible areas that are free to the public that provide that in an equitable manner. So I appreciate the recommendations that you presented and your team and Angie and Matt as well. And thank you.
Thank you. And Sean, how on the same boat, how many people would you say were involved in the research and recommendation of this project from your CIO side?
From the IT side?
Yeah.
We probably had 5 people working on it in different ways.
And Matt, well, how many people you think were involved with you? Okay. Oh, sure. Sure. And how long have you guys been working on this?
5 years.
So I guess I just wanted to take the time to say thank you to you both and your team. You know, and as somebody who doesn't and wasn't really aware of a lot of these things, I appreciate your hard work, and I trust your recommendation today. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for the presentation. I learned a lot. I'm obviously coming to this late, and I like the detailed presentation and the research that you and your team put together. I appreciate that. I have one clarification question. The 378K that you are including here, it does not include the optional things that you showed in a previous slide, right?
So it does include those.
It does include.
Yes.
Okay. Anyone else have questions or comments? I guess the only comment that I would have, Sean, was that initially, when rolling in the cameras and whatnot to this, part of my mind was saying that's something that the county could budget for, and let's make more of this money available for expanding the system as broadly, you know, touch more people who aren't necessarily just using parks and whatnot. But then a part of me realizes that this is the county share of the ARPA money that we, as communities, we all got a share as well. And so the county is not necessarily required to take its portion and distribute it amongst the communities. And so I think ultimately, Brian, I'm with you on the idea of using these monies, even though some of it could be budgeted through the county.
If I might add a caveat to that, I think this approach accelerates the project. Is waiting for the county to, we are bigger government, invest the time to put it in the budget, argue it through the budget, and then hopefully get everything through at budget approval sequence. So this accelerates the project, and they can scope it and start on it immediately. So I think it's a much better approach.
Is there anyone else that has any further comments or questions? Otherwise, we can put this to a vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carried. Thank you, Sean and Matt and everyone on this. We will, with the ARPA funding, basically you've already covered that portion, and we can, if we need to, we can carry that forward to the next agenda.
Appreciate your time.
Okay, very good. Jody, we covered everything that you
I don't know if you wanted to touch on work groups and the memo that you had me send out to the committee members the other day.
Yeah, the one other area was the idea of the focus groups. Is that we had talked about this at the previous meeting, where, as you can see, there's so much information that and things to be considered that as a committee as a whole, we might not be able to go into the depth on and whatnot on some of these things here. And so the idea was, is there an interest in breaking down into some focus groups? And we listed, based on our conversation last month, what some of those might be, and some of them may not necessarily be necessary. I don't know, as I said, I unfortunately do have a hard stop for myself because I have another person waiting for me. We would ask that, by the next meeting, if people think that they might have time to devote to these, or if they feel there's a need, or whether our interest is so broad that all of us want to be included in all of these conversations, and that's certainly fine as well.
So recommend we simply hold that for the next meeting and perhaps make it an agenda item there that we can discuss it in detail.
That would be my suggestion, Brian.
Thank you.
Anyone else have anything they want to brought up at this point? We'd be open to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
I second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you.